Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I'm Ron.
I'm Jean Marie.
And I'm Lita. Collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Galen Warden. Galen has already cared for three of her six children after life-threatening events, plus her father in hospice and her stepmother with advanced Alzheimer's. None of that prepared her for James, her youngest son, getting a severely debilitating chronic illness that doctors did not recognize. Galen's forthcoming memoir will share intimate details of life with severe ME, CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, for her 35-year-old son, who has not left his bed since 2020. Her mission is to shine a light on the harm being done by doctors who claim that ME is psychological and push patients to exercise. She uses social media to support other families facing skeptics and an inhumane lack of support while dealing with severe ME, CFS, long COVID, or other hidden chronic illnesses. Thank you for taking the time to join us today, Galen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, Galen. This is Ron. I want to start out by asking what events led to your son's diagnosis of, and I'm going to try and pronounce this right, myalgic encephalomyelitis or chronic fatigue syndrome?
Yep. Good job. So basically, self-diagnosis led to a real diagnosis. He had symptoms for 10 years that doctors didn't understand, recognize, or validate. He had actually, the final tipping point was when a doctor recommended 2 weeks in a psychiatric facility to evaluate him. And my son just pleaded with us, I know this is physical. I know this is a real sickness. And he found ME online by searching his symptoms. And then we searched for an ME specialist. And that's how he got a diagnosis from a real doctor at Mount Sinai in New York.
Well, yeah, thank goodness he was advocating for himself.
Right.
And was able to find that.
That's right. Yeah. They have to.
Yeah. So I'm glad that he didn't want to go route.
Yeah.
But was there a triggering event? Something that
led to the symptoms?
Yeah.
Sometimes there's like surgery.
You said it was going on for 10 years. I mean, what was it that he said, hey, something's wrong?
When he was 21, he had his third bout of Epstein-Barr mono. So he had had mono twice before, and the third time he got it within a 2-year period, he was super sick. He was in bed for a couple of months. He was so sick. And that was when this decline gradually started, where he got better, but he was never 100%. And very, very gradually, he could not live. He's a musician and music producer. He could not lift an amp. And then he couldn't lift a mic stand, and then he couldn't play guitar, and then he couldn't even, you know, play piano, which just takes this, you know, but you're holding your arms up. And he just, it was shocking to us. And we kept, taking him to doctors saying, why can't he do anything? But it was very gradual. And I think that if people stopped the progress very early with correct treatment, they wouldn't become bedbound like my son.
And Gail, what was life, what was life like, like for you before you became a full-time caretaker for James? I know that you said in your bio that you also care for other of your children who have serious conditions.
I had.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, I kind of wanted to put that out there as experience that I'm not new to dealing with doctors and hospitals, but I was working from home. Down in beautiful Beaufort, South Carolina, so much nature. I mean, you look up and you see eagles and blue herons flying overhead, just walking your dog. I mean, it's gorgeous here. And I was living alone for the first time in my life. I raised six kids by myself, supported them by myself, had cared for these other people, cared for my father in hospice and his wife when he died. And I did all of that. So here I was finally, you know, living the life. And that only lasted about 9 months.
Wow. And I found you on TikTok, as you know. And in TikTok, you mentioned that you and James were talking about his health and the comorbidities that come with time when you have ME/CFS. Is there a timeline of deterioration that is typical for ME/CFS? I mean, like you're saying that in the beginning it was gradual, but is there a timeline that they recognize?
I haven't heard of a recognized timeline, but I can speak to James and to people that I've encountered online. Mm-hmm. For them, it really takes time. It's not consistent. Some people get the worst symptoms immediately. I mean, 2 weeks after they have COVID, all of a sudden they're bedbound, and it stays that way with everything, POTS, everything. James, it took the 10 years. We weren't really terrified until he started getting those comorbidities. For example, the POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, where you get dizzy when you raise your head. He had a lot of vertigo, a lot of dizziness. All these things combined with the severe fatigue were very shocking for us. We weren't, you know, we had no clue what was happening, and we were shocked. Doctors didn't care. They said it doesn't matter. There's nothing wrong with him. So him, it took about 10 years.
And we have spoken with others with living with this condition. And one of the individuals we spoke with was like an Olympic athletic person, a swimmer, like a known swimmer. And she said it was just like all of a sudden it went from she was, you know, absolute top of her game.
Ready to go to the Olympics.
Right. To not being able to do anything. And it's surprising. So like you said, it could be. Yep. It could
be gradual.
Right.
Could be
sudden. Right.
Instant.
Right.
Well.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
Not enough research.
No, you're right. Mm-hmm.
How common is ME/CFS? Is it something that...
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yesterday, December 8th, an article came out citing the CDC coming up with a new number.
Okay.
And that number is 3.3 million in the U.S.
Wow.
3.3 million. It's not rare, but it's not acknowledged, recognized, or treated appropriately.
Okay. And maybe that was a good first step to,
research.
Right. So that funding can be, you know, placed in the national health.
Again, and we've talked about this many times before. This is one of those ones that it's not a visible disability.
Right.
It's in your head.
Right.
Yeah.
And if it's relatively new and it's not something your healthcare provider is familiar with, instead of saying, I don't know, which is something that we hope more healthcare providers will be able to say, they want to just immediately, label it with something. What symptoms are the most worrisome right now? And what, if anything, helps ameliorate like some of your son's symptoms?
His worst symptom is something he calls brain pain or a brain crash. And this is when he has a strong neurological response to overstimulation. For example, loud noise, bright light, a very stressful interaction of some kind. For example, if he were to try to read like a page, he can read maybe a paragraph, but if you were try to read a page, he'd be using his mind, his brain, and his brain goes into this state where it just feels like it's being, he described it as if you're wearing a football helmet, let's say, and someone is hammering it, and your whole head is feeling like bruised. He said that's what it feels like. It's not like a bolt. Like I've had really bad tension headaches where it felt like a bolt of lightning, you know, like into my temple. It's not like that. It's like this dull, overall throbbing pain that is consistent, not just when the hammer hits, but it just stays. Mm-hmm. And recently I've seen the SPECT. I don't know if you saw my TikTok.
Right, I saw that one.
The imaging that shows the brain, that it is in the brain. Mm-hmm. Yes. And these doctors that say it's in your, you know, fantasy world. It's just terrible. And then the second one, which is very terrifying for us and is brand new, is something called gastroparesis. Mm-hmm. It's another one of these comorbidities where his body has started to reject eating. Mm-hmm. He can't eat. He takes a bite of food and he just gags on it. Even though he's hungry, his stomach is growling. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any appetite.
Right.
And it's a neurological thing, mm-hmm. again. And the only thing that helps this horrible condition for him right now is smoking hemp. Okay. None of the medications his specialist has prescribed so far have done anything. And we've got one that's $500 a month out of pocket.
Wow.
We're trying. He's been on it for 2-3 weeks, nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty scary.
Well,
he doesn't want a feeding tube. It's the last thing you want.
Yeah, yeah. I'm right there with someone. Right there with them.
And her handle is Stoned Zebra, about gastroparesis and the fact that cannabis helps her.
Mm-hmm. In order,
yeah,
yeah,
and it helps. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a proponent, so I'm glad that you live in an area that you can
that allows that.
Your
yes.
son allows that.
Yeah.
No. Oh. No, it's not legal, not even medically in South Carolina. We get something very, very tamped down called THCA, which is not regular marijuana.
Right.
And the version that he gets is basically hemp, and he has to smoke like 2 or 3 joints of it to be able to eat a meal, and he hates it. He hates it because he's not enjoying a high. He's just trying to be able to eat. So it's a nightmare. Yeah.
Sorry about that, for sure. Did the healthcare team have to run any tests to arrive at any of the diagnoses? I know he's got several.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, obviously the ME, they have something called a NASA, a lean test. The specialist at Mount Sinai, New York did this, and they monitor your heart rate and everything while you're standing up, and they see how you respond to being vertical. And it was grueling for him because at that point he was already 90% bedbound, but he went through it. Mm-hmm. They ran so many blood tests and urine tests and everything, and they gave him an MRI. So it's a differential diagnosis where they're ruling out, you know, MS, Lyme's. I mean, you list everything. Well-meaning people are constantly saying to me, have you checked mold? Have you checked this? Yes. Believe me, when your son is bedbound, you test everything.
Right.
And he doesn't have any of those things. He just has the ME. And, you know, the comorbidities, there are tests that they can do, but some of them are not worth doing because they are so stressful to him.
Sure.
So we go by the symptoms.
Okay.
So, Galen, before James received his diagnosis, had you ever heard of ME or CFS before?
Nope.
Okay.
No, never. And when he brought it up that he had found it online, we laughed it off.
Oh.
We said, if you found it online, it's hacks and, you know, it's woo-woo.
Right.
But when he got that serious, we had to say, look, you know, this doctor is telling us to commit you. We're going to listen to you. And we looked into it ourselves and, you know, oh my God, the CDC, you know, everybody was acknowledging it. What the hell was wrong with the doctors?
Mm-hmm. Right. So you earlier mentioned about how common it is or how not uncommon it is. Do you have any of your friends or any family, or is James the only one with this?
He's the only one in our immediate circle that has it. Of course, we've met many friends.
Sure.
And I will say that, you know, back through history, they've been, you know, they've been looking at this actually since the 1800s, calling it different things. But when we say that it's, you know, 3 million, that's pretty common. I think what's going on, though we don't have anybody in our family, is that people are not really, you know, coming out of the closet with it because people laugh them off and tell them that they're lazy. Just do it. What the hell's the matter with you? I get tired, too. This is what they face, and they don't want to face that stigma.
Sure.
Understood.
That's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that we have discussed the basics, I think our listeners have a better understanding, hopefully, of this condition. In order to better serve our guests and listening audience, we are now working as an affiliate with a major medical supply warehouse located right here in the United States. You will find our affiliate links on our website. Our goal is to tailor specific medical supplies and equipment based on individual diagnoses to make it less stressful than looking through an entire catalog for what you might need. We are open to your suggestions and will adjust our offerings based on what you, our guests and listeners, find helpful.
Thank you, Ron. Galen, as a caregiver, how do you find time for yourself and avoid burnout?
Well, at first, I didn't know what the hell was happening, and it was so serious. My kids flew down from New Jersey. We were scrambling to find help, and the caregivers that we were finding through care.com, et cetera, had never heard of anything so severe. They didn't want to come. They would come, and I would say, you know, you can't really talk to him because mm-hmm. he's extremely sensitive to sound. And they would say, well, then forget it. You know, I mean, it was really rough. But we finally, I don't know how many months it took, I finally did find caregivers. And when somebody is with my son, I am able to take a break. Sometimes mm-hmm. all I do is sleep. I actually got sick myself because of all that stress in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was working full time when I first started to take care of him because I work from home. And, you know, being up all night with him, because his sleep is totally unpredictable. And he sleeps 2 hours at a time. He sleeps around the clock and is awake around the clock. So I got sick, and I'm actually on disability myself now. But, you know, so getting those caregivers early, I would recommend to everybody, don't wait until you get like me and you just get sick. You know, immediately jump on getting caregiver support.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
And you got them through care.com? Is that what?
Actually, I ended up, I did it first, but then I ended up using the Medicaid. He got disability,
okay,
and Medicaid offers caregivers. So that's really where we ended up. And it was hit and miss. I mean, like I said, we went through a lot of them. But the one that I have right now is actually a friend of mine,
okay,
who saw what I was going through, and she had done this herself in the past. But she signed on with one of the Medicaid care providers.
Perfect.
And she works through them.
So,
okay.
Also, too, how is your human services out there in South Carolina? And the reason I'm asking is I work for human services here in Illinois, and they offer programs to assist people. So again, different state, but I'm sure they have similar services.
We have, because of the way South Carolina is, the types of people that you run into in that kind of a service area are voluntary organizations. Government provided support is not very strong for us. There is an organization called South Carolina House Calls, and they provide nurse practitioners to come to the home,
okay,
which is huge because he's home, head, you know, bed bound, mm-hmm, which is great. And they prescribe and, you know, just kind of keep an eye on basic needs. He has a specialist out of state, but that's great. But in terms of, you know, when I needed a ramp, everybody said, you know, call this, call that, mm-hmm, there's grants. Everything was backed up for years. There was absolutely no way to get any services. So I had to do a GoFundMe, you know, mm-hmm, put my hat out, you know, begging for help. And I got a ramp, mm-hmm, that way.
Well, I'm glad you were able to do that and
yeah, you took
find an innovative
to
way
it,
to
yes,
do it rather
yeah,
than having to wait for
yeah,
forever.
Right.
Yeah.
And what role, well, I guess I have two questions. What has filled the void? Because James went from having his focus, and I'm guessing his joy in life was music for a long time.
Yes.
So what has helped fill that void? And did he have to grieve for that loss?
Yeah.
And then...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No.
Okay. So when James lost his ability to make music, he did feel absolutely adrift. You know, what is the point of living if I can't do anything meaningful, anything that defines me as a person? He had been a musician since he was 14. He had, he was just at the beginning of a career with music. One of his songs that he wrote and produced and a young lady sang was in the opening, and two of songs were in the opening and closing credits of one of Burt Reynolds' last films called Apple of My Eye. And, you know, he was just beginning. So losing that was traumatic, and we all grieved so badly. And what he ended up doing, two things. One, he started playing music in his mind, singing in his mind, replaying Sade or Miles Davis or anybody that he loved, because he'd been listening to music, like I said, since he was 14. He would just play songs in his mind and listen to them as if he had headphones on and he could listen, which he was unable to do. Then he discovered in, I think it was July of 2020, that he could use talk to text. He couldn't really use his phone, but he could talk softly at his phone. And he started writing poetry. And this is similar to song lyrics. And he just wrote his first poem, and he took off, and he was writing like five poems a day. And I ended up publishing 100 poems of his by October of that year, just a few months later. And that was really helpful. He was able to get on Instagram, and, you know, he had more than 10,000 people following his JS Lyrical poetry page, which is such a validation. I mean, it saved him, really, I'd say, to do this. Instagram shut him down, accused him of fraud, and we couldn't fight it. So that's really sad. He lost all of that. Yeah. Instagram, so cruel. But in any event, he did find a creative outlet, and that was really good.
That is good.
Yeah.
And are you able to assist him, or is he able to do any exercises or anything in bed to prevent bed sores and atrophy?
Right.
And then what role does nutrition play because of the gastroparesis? Is there anything you can do as far as, little meals throughout the day, or what techniques are you using to help make sure meets his nutritional needs?
Those are both good questions. Regarding the fact that he's been in the bed since 2020, he has always on good days, not every single day, on good days, been able to turn himself, to stretch his legs. So he does movements. Plus, when I toilet him in the bed, he raises his hips for me to put the chucks under him, those blue, pads. For him to go, and then he raises his hips again when I put his boxers on him. So he does, those little movements all the time. And I think that's really helpful. Bed sores are not an issue for him, thank God. And when he's functionally paralyzed, it doesn't last for more than a few days. So we're good that way. As far as diet goes, he has had no sugar, no wheat for years now. And minimal dairy. He has certain dairy and not milk. But the gastroparesis does need him to eat exactly as you said, less, more frequently. Mm-hmm. Very difficult. We're getting the nutrition in him, but it's such a challenge. And this is new to us. It's only about 3 months, so. We're still figuring it out and trying to work it out. If I can get one meal in him a day that's like a meal, like chicken and rice with some veggies, like a stir fry, if I can do that, I'll feel really good. Other things he might have is a little watermelon. I mean, sad to say, but this is where we are. He might have I'll give him a sandwich and he'll just have a few bites. It's challenging. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So Galen, I understand you've written a book about your journey. What was it that inspired you, or why a book?
Well, To tell you the truth, I'm about 90% done with it. I haven't finished it. And I'm still struggling with the title because I feel like a title is key. I'm a marketer. I had a marketing career for 30 years. So I know how important words are, and I have a lot of copywriting under my belt. So I felt like it was perfect for me to kind of fill a gap in the market for this disease. We have a lot of books, you know, that cover it in a general way. We have a lot of collections of stories about people's lives, and they say things like, you know, he's been bedbound for 3 years or whatever, but that's sort of too amorphous. We don't really get the nitty gritty picture. So here's a mother. I'm a mom, and I haven't seen any books by mothers, caregivers doing this. And I am able to shine that spotlight on what it is like for him and for me to deal with this. The suffering, the sacrifice, the isolation, the severe contraction of life into one room. It, people can't really comprehend it, because if you've ever walked into the room of a person dying of cancer, and I hate to bring that up because I know it might be traumatic for people to think about this, but just bear with me for one moment, because I've done this. They may have only weeks to live, and you can go over to them and kiss their head and hold their hand and open their window and show them the birds. You can do all of this and give them, even with their morphine all the way up, give them love and help them to see something of nature. With James, when he's suffering, he can't tolerate another human being in his room. He can't tolerate being touched. He can't look out through a crack in the window, even at moonlight. Light attacks his brain. Sound, he can't listen to you talk to him and tell him that you love him. All you can say is yes, no. I mean, that's all you're allowed to say when this disease is really bad. And it's just a torture that people can't comprehend. You can't wrap your head around it, because we refer to experiences in our own past or those we know. There's nothing like this when it becomes severe. So my book will help people put our shoes on, walk a mile in our shoes. And I think it's really needed.
Yeah, it's absolutely definitely a different perspective.
Yeah. And we look forward to reading your work.
Thank you.
You know, you'll have to let us know when it comes out.
Hopefully 2024. That's my hope.
All right. We're rooting for you. And Galen, what do you feel is the most... it sounds like a lot is misunderstood, but what do you feel is the most misunderstood aspect of this condition?
I think what I just said is the most helpful for this question. And that is, if you don't have a reference, you can't understand it. You can't say, I get tired too. I had the flu. Oh yeah, I know what that's like. I had the flu. I couldn't get out of bed for a week. You don't know. You don't know, because this is neurological, and that brain pain, that aspect of the brain fog and the feeling lost in your own head, it's terrifying. And you weren't terrified when you had the flu. So I think that's what I would say is the most difficult to understand, is just how people talk about post-exertional malaise, PEM. That's one of the key features. I don't like the word malaise. We're not used to it. We don't use it. We don't know what it really stands for. So what I say is post-exertional collapse, because these people literally collapse. They're in bed possibly for days after overexerting.
Okay.
Gotcha. Galen, you mentioned in one of your videos that the risk for suicide is higher than average and... in patients that have ME. You personally, what do you do to help moderate James's symptoms of his depression?
So the suicide rate is double the normal average. I read an article on it. And James, like everybody else that I know, does not want to die. He doesn't have any of the symptoms of depression, in that he's full of ideas, of goals, of things he wants to do, of the life he wants to live. He doesn't feel like he has, like people with depression in general have this listless, you know, attitude, you know, oh, why bother, whatever. He wants to bother. And the problem is he can't. He can't act on any of the things he wants to do. And so I don't like calling it depression. I would say he doesn't want to live like this. He wants to live, but he doesn't want to live like this, suffering every single day, cut off from people, cut off from friends, cut off from interactions. So I would say what we do is he finds things like the poetry, and with a new supplement he's taking, mm-hmm. he's able to use his computer. He has one of those, you know, wireless keyboards that's very lightweight, and there's a computer screen at the end of his bed. He's able to do that now. So anything that he can do that helps him, you know, not feel completely helpless, useless, whatever. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge to have a life in your bed. So, and the other thing that we do is, which I'm sure he's aware of, I make sure that I never, ever, and I mean this, ever complain about taking care of him. I want to make sure that he never sees me frustrated with him or upset or angry or in any way that he is a burden to me. No matter what he needs, I'm like on it. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. He's like, oh, I know you just went to bed and he has to have a bowel movement at 2 a.m. And I'm like, hey, it's okay. I never walk in there with a grumpy face. I never act frustrated with him ever. And I think that that is really key to helping him have a sense that it's okay. He doesn't okay. have to take his life to spare me some crazy burden of caring for him. So for me, that is the second tool. The first tool is him having meaningful things. The second tool is me always being caring, patient, loving, generous, and kind always.
All right.
So I actually have a follow-up question to something we talked about earlier, or you mentioned respite care. What do you do for yourself? Because it's a lot. I mean, you've got a lot going on, and like you say, you can't show frustration and all that, but you are human, and there's a lot. I guess the easiest way is your plate is a platter. There's a lot on there. What do you do for yourself? Because you have to be able to take care of yourself so that you can take care of him.
The first thing that I did when he became very sick and I was crashing and burning, literally, was I got a therapist. And I had virtual therapy for about a year. And that made all the difference in the world, because one of the reasons I was burning out was because I was having traumatic responses. I had some trauma as a child, like I think everybody does. And by working through that, I was able to lighten my load. And all of a sudden, you know, him having these extreme needs and so many demands on me all of a sudden didn't feel like the end of the world. And the second thing that I do is once a month, I get a massage. And I have not a care in the world. It's while someone is with my son. I can't do this if he's not, you know, being cared for by a caregiver.
Understood.
But I get that massage. And then in the evenings, if he doesn't need me for a while, like let's say I just brought him a meal, I will sit in my bed and make jewelry. I design jewelry. And it's a beautiful hobby because it's very small. It's not like doing a 5-foot oil painting. I can just do it right on my lap. And it's creative. It makes me happy.
That's nice. That's wonderful.
Again, the key is you've got to be able to feel good with yourself in order to be able to help somebody else. And that's
so
a
important.
Big thing with caregivers.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand that.
I talk to a lot of parents. Yeah, I talk to a lot of parents who are terrified and taking care of severe ME kids for the first time. They reach out to me. And this is something really important that I tell them. If you drop dead, they have nobody. So what are you doing? Jumping like a nervous wreck every second they need something and killing yourself and burning yourself out. Figure out what can wait 2 minutes for you to go to the bathroom before you go and bring that water to them or whatever they need. When somebody is bedbound, your first response is everything is urgent. And I tell them, you just can't do that to yourself. You have to find a way to take care of yourself. Because if you literally die from stress over this, then what do they have? So you're taking care of them by taking care of you.
Right.
Nicely
put. In my job, I work with students with severe physical disabilities.
And nice.
I talk with their families. Yeah, I talk with their families a lot and the students about future care. And again, just moving forward with all of this, as they get older, we as caregivers get older too. And then what's going to happen? So there's a lot of planning too for the future.
Yeah. We haven't really crossed that bridge yet. It's on our plate, me and all my other kids. I got five other kids. We all, you know, we approach it. We come up with little ideas, you know, moving him up to New Jersey where they are, et cetera.
Yeah. And you never know right what now, the future is going to bring,
mm-hmm.
you know, with increased research funding and things of that nature.
Right.
Every day, right. you know, there's a new discovery and hopefully you'll benefit from future research and future treatment options. Or your son, you know, you and your family and, you know, your son. Okay.
Are there any alternative therapies such as massage therapy, heat or ice? I can't picture acupuncture working if he doesn't like too much stimulation. Is there anything that helps any of his symptoms?
Yes, he really benefits when his pain is bad in his brain. I know this is going to sound weird, but he really benefits from, I have this like long beanbag type of thing that I put in the microwave and put it around the back of his neck and down his shoulders. And that warmth for some reason gives him relief.
Yep.
I do massage him. I massage his shoulders, his back, his arms. Actually, I massage his whole body, but very gently. And, you know, he lets me know if it's too much and, you know, he edits what I'm doing constantly, which, you know, if I had not had my therapy would have triggered me,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have no problem. Oh, you're doing it too hard. Oh, you're doing it too soft. I don't care. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. I'll adjust, you know, no problem.
Right.
And, like I said, grateful for therapy.
Yeah. Excellent.
Good.
Yeah.
So Galen, what are some less apparent part of your life that have been affected by caring for James? How has that affected you?
Well, two things. One, my health was affected. At the beginning, because I didn't know what was going on and I didn't have support, I got sick. And I have something called sarcoidosis, and it got pretty bad. Now I have prednisone therapy, I have diabetes, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, you know, a myriad problems for myself, which I, you know, the massage helps and the caregivers coming and letting me rest helps. Like I said, sometimes I just lie in my bed. I mean, a lot of time I just lie in my bed and that helps. And I don't talk about those things at all. So I don't draw attention mm-hmm. to them. But on a personal level and for other caregivers, you have to know that if you are not getting the support you need, these things can happen to you. And it's a, you know, lifelong sentence for me. I mean, I'm not going to all of a sudden be cured from sarcoidosis. It's chronic. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, your life is contracted. People want to take you to lunch. They want to hang out with you, you know. And you just can't do those things. The time that I would have spent being social, I spend writing my book, which I feel is a priority. One day, and I tell everybody this, my kids and everything, one day I'll take a trip. I'll, you know, go out to dinner and have fun. You know, I mean, I'm not fatalistic at all about this.
Okay.
That's a good attitude.
Right.
And I think that answered my next question about friends and family, because that can be a challenge to have to get assistance from them when, you know. Yeah.
Well, it kind of leads into mine, though.
Yes.
In general, how can, from your perspective, Galen, how can friends and family support a full-time caregiver?
I really believe in the bottom of my heart that there is not much they can do for the person with ME, because it's so specialized and those restrictions of not being able to talk to them can be so difficult. But we need to have the kitchen floor cleaned and the laundry done and grocery shopping and, you know, errands and things like that, pick up things at the drugstore. I mean, the endless list of everyday, banal, common, rudimentary, fundamental life things, the,
right.
the practical things, those are the places that, as boring as it is, they can be really helpful and make a huge difference.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Galen, what advice do you have for someone who has recently been diagnosed with this condition?
People use the term pacing. They use it liberally without explaining it. And we were told about pacing when he got his diagnosis at Mount Sinai. Okay, now you have to pace. We didn't know what that meant. What is pacing? What does that mean? So the urgent message I have to anyone who even suspects they have this disease is to stop exerting yourself and do 80%, never 100%, 80% of what you could do. So if you pushed yourself, or if you, you know, went to your limit, let's say that you could walk half a mile, or let's say that you could stand for an hour. Well, you have to do 80% of that. Don't get to that point, because then you're risking a crash, especially if there are other elements involved, maybe stress, maybe something emotional. So all of this compounds to use up your energy envelope. And that's a term that I really like, because it's very easy to imagine that you've got a capacity and it's limited with ME. And if you go to your full capacity, you are hurting yourself. So I'm not telling you you can't do anything, because if you're mild, there's plenty you can do. But I am saying that you have to watch it, because pushing and crashing, which some people do and laugh about, oh yeah, I went to the mall and now I'm going to be in bed for 2 days. Ha ha ha. I'm paying the price. Oh God, that is so irresponsible and foolish, because that is how you end up with a lower baseline and not able to go to the mall ever again. So that's what I would say.
So it's okay to do what you're doing, just don't push the limits.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, Galen, before we wrap up this episode, we have been following your advocacy on TikTok. Are you on other social media platforms as well? And could you share your links with our listeners?
Sure. Very simple to remember if you don't remember my name, Galen Warden. I have a website, severemecfs.com. Very easy to remember. There you will see all about me. There's a page about James. You'll see all about James. There's a page about his book where you can see people reading his poetry, because he couldn't do it. And then under resources, so severemecfs.com/resources, you will find a lot of links and PDFs to government literature, scientific research, peer-reviewed, that you can share with your family and friends. And the blog has some really great stuff about gurney transportation, toileting in the bed, just these practical things. So you want that. And then I have an Instagram, which is also severemecfs. That's the at, you know, severemecfs, which James manages for me. I give him the content and he posts it because I'm not good with Instagram. And I'm on Facebook, Galen Warden. I'm the only Galen Warden on the planet. So if you, you know, look for Galen Warden on Facebook, you'll see my Facebook, which is a private account but I make everything about this topic public. I just don't have pictures of my grandchildren or whatever, you know, on there.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
So, Galen, thank you so much. Thank you for joining our show today. We look forward to reading your book in 2024.
Yeah.
For our listeners, if you have any questions or comments related to today's show, you can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast.
As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast.
Till next week.